ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, March 29th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we're just 2 days away from the Final Four, and we got two great guests to break it down with us here today. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We're at NIT, CBI, CIT, Final Four, National Championship. Ask the guys the same question we've discussed this week about what worked and what didn't during the college basketball season. And, of course, as you know, we'll chat a little bit of college football with Brad Powers to kick off that segment. Over at BangTheBook.com, guess what, boys and girls? It's opening day. So I wrote up my picks and analysis article over there at BangTheBook.com on the front page, on our MLB page. And I also pinned a link to that static URL on my Twitter page, at Skating Tripod, so you can get my daily MLB picks and analysis each and every day here as you go throughout the season. Also, my MLB Daily Fantasy posted for today as well. Lots of college basketball content for the Final Four. Lyle Harrison with some good previews, good preview capsules of all four teams. We've got daily NHL picks from Parker Michaels, NBA picks Monday, Wednesday, Friday from Doug Carson, my How to Bet article every Tuesday, Thursday. We'll have a Masters preview next week. I'll have UFC next week as well since that returns. So much stuff going on over there. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Sign up for those free pick contests. Check out our sportsbook reviews, free pick videos, matchup data section with side-by-side statistical comparisons of the two teams in play. Great stuff going on over there at bangthebook.com. Make sure that you check it all out. Two guests coming your way here today on the program. The first, the great Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday morning?
I'm doing well, buddy. Good to hear your voice today. And, you know, for our listeners that listen regularly, this is the last time that we'll be doing our daily shows for this football and basketball season. So, Brad, before we dig too deep into everything here, man, I just want to thank you for all the time and effort and the commitment that you put out there, you know, to join me on this show. You and I have become pretty good friends over doing this for the past couple of years. And, you know, your expertise means a lot to me and to our listeners. So, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day each and every week.
Hey, appreciate it. And obviously, labor of love here, man. No big whoop. Love talking to you. I learn a lot from doing the segments and thoroughly enjoy doing them each and every week for about 8 months.
So let's talk about what you're going to be doing here over the, I guess I'll call it downtime, although you never take any downtime. You're like the Terminator, dude. There's no time wasted there in your life. So you've got your spring football guide up now over at BradPowersSports.com. Beautiful publication here, man. Anything that you found out with these spring games going on that you want to pass along to our listeners here today?
I mean, just a few of them that have gone so far, the ones that I've dived into, Colorado and Vanderbilt, nothing earth-shattering in either one. Really haven't changed my opinion or thought process on either team. You know, just learning the players, learning the new coaches, learning the possibility of there being new schemes. And didn't, you know, nothing earth-shattering where I completely, you know, went into that spring game with those two teams and thought, hey, this is more like a 5-win team. Now all of a sudden I'm thinking they're more like a 7-win team. That wasn't the case. But as you know, I know you're heading down to South Carolina. There's a big spring game for the Gamecocks this upcoming weekend. I'll be taking notes and watching that one. And then starting next week on April the 7th, I mean, you have at least 30 spring games. I think each week, or at least the first 3 weeks of April. So that's where it really gets you know, hot and heavy as far as breaking down teams. And there's about 50 of them that are actually on TV now, and I'll take notes on all of them. And a lot of times you can find some value off of it.
So in terms of power ratings adjustments, have you made any based on the spring games, or are you just sort of compiling notes right now and then you'll revisit that, you know, maybe once all those games are completed?
Absolutely. Great question. That will be the case as far as power ratings. And there's really nothing in the marketplace where, you know, it's not like season win totals or anything like that are out, or game of the year lines or week one lines outside of five dimes. So there hasn't been a real necessity, but I just prefer to make the tweaks, to take all the notes down. And I usually fill up about 3 comp books, the old comp books that you'd have in high school and stuff like that, about, you know, obviously about 100 pages or so. I fill usually about 3 of them books off up in the off season, and you know, probably at the end of April, once the spring practices are done, I'll go in and tweak some power ratings and get ready for, you know, I think right around in mid-May is when CG released some season win totals last year.
You know, I do like that you mentioned that you write this stuff down. And I had a listener question a couple of weeks ago. I think I actually forgot to follow up with some of our guests here about it. You know, sort of wondering about how you track your information, how you have all of your research compiled. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's great to have Excel spreadsheets and to be able to do, you know, all that stuff with the programs that are out there. But for me, I was always a person growing up in school. If I wrote it down, I remembered it. If I type it out now, I'm lucky if I remember it the next day. So, you know, I'm glad to hear that you kind of do it a little bit old school.
Yeah, I mean, I do both, obviously. I mean, the Excel spreadsheets, I mean, I have a line out on every single game and a season win total already, an early one on every single team. So, I mean, obviously that's a lot easier to do in an Excel spreadsheet, but I'm right there with you. If I read something and then I just take that extra step and write it down, I've always been that way and always learned better, and I like going back through it. And so that's the easiest way that I've learned all the way through college studying, and I was a pretty good student. So it worked for me in high school and college, and it's worked for me so far in my career. I don't mind writing it down the old-fashioned way.
And lots of stuff for you to check out here in this spring football guide. 21 new coaching hires. You mentioned all of those. You've got recruiting rankings listed in here as well, not to mention all the picks that you've had during the lifetime here of the Powers Picks newsletter. So how can people pick up that publication?
Yeah, it's free. So, I mean, all you got to do is go to bradpowersports.com. Once you go to the website, and you just go to the free picks section. You can download all past newsletters from the past year. You can check it out what an issue normally looks like during the regular season in a week. But it's right at the top. If you go to bradpowersports.com, click on the free picks, you'll see that download the 2018 spring football preview newsletter. It's free. And not only, you know, recruiting and stuff like that, but we got all the bets that I made as far as future tickets so far, my early top 10, as far as power ratings, five most improved teams, you name it, anything that you need to get you going as far as college football, because a lot of these spring games are going to be on here in the next month. And if you're not a true blue baseball guy like Adam, and you're not interested really in the NBA playoffs like most people aren't, go ahead and check out that spring guide for free.
All right, let's transition over to the college basketball side of things here. A few big games left to be played in that. We've got finals games for the CIT, CBI, NIT, and then, of course, that little thing called March Madness. So let's go ahead and start with tonight's game here, Penn State and Utah. Utah, four-and-a-half-point dog, now open to three-point dog. So Penn State very clearly the preferred side here at Madison Square Garden, as somebody will cut down the nets as the NIT champ.
Yeah, and I agree with the line move. I had a pretty big play on Penn State in the semifinal round where they're laying a cheaper number to actually, I thought at least a better Mississippi State team than this Utah team. But that one was pretty easy when Penn State went on that 24-0 run. And the thinking behind it is, I mean, this will now be, as far as the NIT championship game, the fifth game played in MSG for Penn State here in the last month, going back to the Big Ten tournament. And now, at least coming in tonight, Penn State's a perfect 4-0 against the spread at MSG. They, you know, when you look at them compared to Utah, they have the better offense, better defense, play the tougher schedule, and they're going to have a significant crowd advantage. I mean, it's not that far of a drive, and also Penn State, being a big school there, has a lot of alums in the New York City area. And if you watch the semifinal game, they had the crowd advantage. So I agree with the line move. I mean, there's been some value lost, but if you can get a four out there, I mean, Penn State's the pick for me. I think they cut down the nets and win the game by 10.
So here's a question I want to touch on with you, and I just sort of thought about this, so I'm kind of coming up with it on the fly. We talk about the bowl bounce, and we talk about, you know, teams that play really well in their bowl games. I know this is something you'll look to do from a season win total standpoint, and then also with some of those week one lines that come out. You know, sometimes teams can be a little bit overvalued based on what they did in the bowl season, or subsequently undervalued based on what they didn't do in the bowl season. Do you feel like there's a bowl bounce type of thing here for, you know, the winner of the NIT?
Yeah, I think in past years, the winner of the NIT has actually turned around and had a pretty good season the following. That's great, because I'm going to have to do some research, but if memory serves correct, I remember quite a few years where, you know, teams like, even like in North Carolina, and teams like, I think, you know, Michigan had one year where they won the NIT, and then the next year had a really good year. So I think it's good, particularly, I mean, it's going to be on a team-by-team, case-by-case, you know, situation. But if you got a team that's relatively young and a lot of starters coming back, I think this is a good springboard as far as not only your offseason, but getting ready for the upcoming season. Let's face it, I mean, this year's NIT, I think I had 16 teams that would have been ranked in the top 68, meaning that if we just did a pure power rating, you know, taking the 68 best teams in the country, you know, 16 of them would have actually made the NCAA tournament. So this was a very, very strong NIT field this year. And, I mean, Penn State being a four seed I thought was a joke to begin with, because I actually had Penn State from a power ratings aspect coming into the NIT as like a, you know, the power rated number 30 team in the country. And they've just lived up to expectations in all four rounds so far. So, I mean, yeah, why the heck not? I think when it's all said and done, if Penn State wins and covers this game, and even, you know, use the KenPom metrics and that, this is a team will probably finish in the top 25 of my power ratings when it's all said and done.
All right, let's take a look at the CIT one here. We actually don't have lines for the CBI with North Texas winning that game last night and extending that championship series one more game. Illinois, Chicago, and Northern Colorado. We got a couple of places out there in the market that have this. Heritage, Five Dimes, Bet Online, 9.5, the number for this one for the CIT title game. And, you know, what really stands out to me about this game, Brad, is that you've got this Illinois-Chicago team that has to go and play in altitude, but it looks like that's been priced into the number.
Yeah, it has. And kudos to Illinois-Chicago. That was a team that I kind of leaned with. And really, in a stretch from, like, I want to say mid-January to early February, where that one of the hottest teams in the country as far as, you know, straight up and an ATS mark. I think they had a stretch where they went like 11-1 straight up and against the spread. You know, kind of dwindled down the stretch of the conference play in the Horizon, and then also didn't have a great tournament there. But, you know, won and covered each of their three tournament games so far. You know, impressive, big-time impressive last two games, winning outright as a dog. And their best performance was at Liberty, obviously last night, winning by 16 as a five-point underdog. But Northern Colorado coming into the tournament, I thought was by far the best team in this tournament, and they've done nothing to really, you know, change that thought process for me. Another dominating win last night against Sam Houston State. They're laying a 10.5. Not sure I'm going to get too involved here. I normally don't like laying 9.5. I think it's two play on teams, to be honest with you. I'd like to play on both. I'm not going to fade Northern Colorado. Your next guest, I'm going to give the tip of the cap to him, Ralph Michaels. I want to say in the month of November and December, he told me Northern Colorado was, you know, his team, and he used them multiple times as big plays. He's been on them all year. He'll probably be better to talk about specifically about that team, but it is a team that's won and covered six straight for them. So they very well could have been a team. You know, the Montana game in the conference tournament came up just short. They could have been a team that could have easily made the big dance and could have made some noise had they gotten there. So they clearly deserve to be the big favorite here. Not inclined to lay a lot of points because I do like Illinois-Chicago quite a bit.
All right, well, then let's go to Saturday here. Let's talk Final Four. First game, left side of the bracket, Loyola-Chicago takes on Michigan. And for Michigan to be here, it's not really that big of a surprise. I mean, they did win the Big Ten Conference Tournament for the second straight year. As we know, played as well as anybody pretty much over the last 6 weeks of the regular season. Loyola-Chicago, though, I mean, you know, good team, very, very good team by Missouri Valley Conference standards, but nobody really expected them to be in this position, and yet here they are, albeit as a 5.5-point dog in the first semifinal game.
Yeah, and look, it's been a great story for Loyola Chicago so far this tournament run. And look, it's great seeing a number 11, seeing Sister Jean and all that. But, I mean, the reality is they've been – I think three of their four games have been right around pick 'em, maybe a very short dog. And by short dog, I'm talking like 1 point. So it's not been like they've been a huge Cinderella here so far in the first four games to advance to the Final Four, with the exception of the Tennessee game where they were getting 4.5, 5 points. They're a great team. Obviously, underrated entering the tournament. I think Vegas was kind of on top of that, the fact that they were only about a 1.5-point dog to the number six seed, Miami, in that first game. But I'm a little concerned here for Loyola Chicago. And number one for me is that easy path. And not only did they not face a number one or a number two seed or talented teams like Arizona or Kentucky, but you look at the four teams they faced, all four teams are missing a very key component, a starter. Miami is missing their guard Brown, Nevada missing Drew down the stretch. Loyola Chicago played, you look at the game against Kansas State, Dean Wade didn't play for the Wildcats. So benefited from, you know, teams that were obviously not top-rated seeds, and also teams that were missing players. And then you look from experience level. What has made Loyola so good here in the tournament is they've taken advantage of relatively inexperienced teams. Out of the 20 starters they faced so far, only three have been seniors. So a very experienced Loyola team that plays really well, moves well without the basketball. Richardson and Custer have been playing with each other since the third grade, but they've taken advantage of teams that aren't very experienced. Well, Michigan, that's not the case. Michigan's got two senior starters, two junior starters, don't start a freshman. And Michigan does a lot of the same things Loyola does well that I just didn't. But Michigan has better talent levels. So that's some concerns for me. And I guess I have a big-time rooting interest because right after the Big Ten semifinal, I went ahead and went steep on the Wolverines 40-1 to win it all. So I'm hoping that they advance and I can really do some hedging in that national title game.
So are you letting this future ride then?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna let. I don't think I'm gonna touch too much of it in this one. I actually like Michigan against the spread here, so I'm maybe a little bit of dabble, but I think I'm gonna let it ride. It's not life changing money for me. It'll pay for a vacation or two though, some good vacation. So I think you know, since it's not life changing and they're a significant favorite here, I'm pretty confident that they'll go ahead and. You know, at least advance to the national title game on Monday night. And, you know, with me just saying that, you know, if I was you guys out there listening, I'd run to your bookies or, you know, if you're doing some offshore places at, you know, Bet DSI, I'd go ahead and place a massive bet on Loyola since I'm pretty much, you know, expecting Michigan to easily advance here. That's what usually happens when old Brad Powers got a big ticket on something.
Well, if you hit that future, you hit that hedge. The bar tab out there when I come out to Vegas again is on you. I love the point that you brought up about how experienced Michigan is and how inexperienced the teams that Loyola has played have been. I think that's a fascinating point, something that no one's talked about here on this show. And truth be told, I haven't seen anyone talk about it in any context out there in the marketplace trying to break this game down. So that's a very, very astute point by you. And I think it's also pretty telling here that of the path that Loyola faced, I mean, this is their biggest underdog role now. And they're taking on another 3-seed. They played a 3-seed when they played Tennessee, and that was a 4.5-point spread. Now it's 5.5. I don't know where this number goes by tip-off. I won't pretend to even speculate on that because Loyola is such a beloved public dog, but Michigan, you know, obviously a very big name and kind of a public team in their own right. So I don't know where this line necessarily goes, but I think that's kind of telling here that, you know, Loyola Chicago has played as well as they have. They've won close games with the exception of that Kansas State game, but now this is their biggest underdog role. And we talk about looking for context clues out there in the marketplace. To me, this sort of feels like one.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, their most impressive performance obviously came in the Elite Eight. You know, it's kind of a head-scratching performance from Kansas State, how poorly they played. But you got to give some kudos to Loyola so far, but yeah, I mean, to put it in context, I know you said Michigan's a 3-seed. I didn't think Michigan was a 3-seed entering the tournament. I mean, I actually had Michigan number 5 in the country in my power ratings after the Big Ten title run, and it wasn't just a Big Ten tournament. I mean, Michigan, you know, the last 6-7 games of the regular season was playing about as well as anyone. I mean, you look at them, I think their last 30 games are 26-4, and two of those straight-up losses were coin flip games, Purdue teams, so two wins against Michigan State away from home, not in Ann Arbor. I thought they were a legitimate team that probably should have been on the 2-seed line. So I thought they were underrated coming in. And, you know, and one more thing I want to bring up, it's a concern. A lot of people haven't brought it up. Loyola Chicago's offensive rebounding percentage among the worst in the entire country. I think number 334 hasn't come in and played a part in any of their four games so far because they've hit better than 50% from the field in those games. So you don't need offensive rebounds, but when you're actually making your shots, I question whether they can hit better than 50% from the field against a top five Michigan defense, especially played in that huge arena. That's a football stadium and not a typical basketball stadium that sometimes has a different shooting backdrop. So if they're not hitting 50%, I really can't trust them to rebound the basketball very well. Michigan's a top 20 team when it comes to defensive rebounding percentages. So that's another specific matchup concern that I have for Loyola in this game.
All right, let's go to the nightcap here. And again, some people calling this game the national championship game. And we'll, of course, see what happens on Monday. But Kansas and Villanova. Villanova, 5-point favorite here. I believe there were some 5.5s out there sporadically yesterday, but those seem to have been swallowed up. And you know, I'll tell you what, you know, we've had such a crazy tournament. We've had these strange upsets. We've had 13 over 4. You know, we've had 5 seeds holding up when they were supposed to lose to 12 seeds. We've had this Loyola run. And yet everything is right in the world with 2 number ones on the right side of the bracket.
Yep, and, you know, Kansas, a little bit, I know they're number one seed, but obviously an upset to beat Duke in the last game in the Elite Eight is about a 3.5 point underdog in that one. So they weren't necessarily favored to come out of that region against Duke. But, yeah, 2 number one seeds, 2 blue bloods of the sport, it's good. I think we have a really good Final Four with 3 kind of blue bloods and the Cinderella of all Cinderellas. So this particular matchup, though, believe it or not, even though I think that, you know, you got 2 number one seeds, I think there's a clear mismatch. I think Villanova is by far the best team in the country. And, you know, Vegas agrees the fact that they're a 5-point favorite. And let's look how good Villanova is in the last game, Elite Eight round, against a very good Texas Tech team. A Texas Tech team, Keenan Evans doesn't get hurt, probably wins the Big 12 regular season title. At least they were leading it and had a win in Lawrence against Kansas earlier in the season when he's healthy. So a very good Big 12 team they faced. Villanova has their worst shooting percentage, not of this season, not of last season. How about the last 3 years? Hit only 33% of their shots. And still, even though they were 4 out of 24 from three-point range, still beat a very good Big 12 team by double digits. And prior to that, beat another very good Big 12 team, West Virginia, by double digits. So I think Villanova, you know, you look at historically, offensively, it's the second best offense as far as efficiency ratings in the last 17 years, according to KenPom. It's a team that's 7 made three-pointers away from setting the NCAA record for most by a team in a single season. I don't expect them, you know, to hit maybe their season average of, what, 45% or so from behind the arc. They got 6 guys that hit 39% or more, but I definitely don't expect Villanova to go 4 out of 24 from three-point range. If they hit 8 out of 24, obviously they beat Texas Tech by 20. And if they can beat Texas Tech by 20, hitting 33% of their threes, I think that they can win and cover against Kansas here. I like the Wildcats minus the 5.
I like Kansas, I like Villanova in this game too. And, you know, one of the reasons why is because, you know, you look at Kansas, and I talked about this earlier on in the week, defensively they're strong at the rim. And I don't know how strong they are out on the perimeter. And Villanova gets so many clean looks. I mean, that's one thing you got to give Texas Tech a lot of credit, as you mentioned, that, you know, defensively, they really locked down in the second half. The problem is nobody could create offense for Texas Tech. And that's the reason why they only scored 59 points. But, you know, defensively, they played really, really well. And I think that's a credit to Chris Beard, who does, you know, such a fine job with that Red Raiders program. I don't know if Bill Self gets Kansas to change its spots. I know Kansas played okay defensively against Duke for certain stretches of that game. But Villanova's ball movement is just off the charts. And I think that's where the matchup disadvantage comes in for Kansas. I don't know how they stop Villanova. I think Kansas scores here too, but I just don't know how they stop Villanova enough times down the floor.
I mean, I agree with that. Now, I mean, Villanova, because Kansas has a lot better offense by far than Texas Tech. I mean, if Villanova goes 4 out of 24, I mean, Kansas is the type of team that's going to make them pay on the other side of the ball. But, you know, you also got to give some credit to, you know, you're right, Texas Tech defensively, though, is a top 5 team when it comes to defensive efficiency. And I thought Villanova maybe being a little bit tired after, you know, facing West Virginia in the prior round and the press. I mean, that was a bad matchup for Villanova's offense, but they still came away with a double-digit win despite having an historically poor shooting percentage. I don't think that'll be the case here. And also, you got to give credit to Villanova's defense, which has been much improved down the stretch, and that's what's made them, you know, a step cut above everyone else in the country. You know, you look 6 weeks ago, Villanova's defense wasn't even ranked in the top 40. Now that you look at their last 9 games, they've held 7 opponents to 70 points or less. You look at the efficiency numbers, now they're in the top 15 in the country. So, I mean, obviously, they're playing elite level on offense, one of the best offenses we've seen in the last 15 years. And when you got a top 15 defense, I mean, lo and behold, I mean, that's why you're the best team in the country. Kansas, you're right. I don't think they can lock down Villanova. I mean, full season stats say Kansas doesn't even have a top 40 defense. And I just don't expect Villanova to have that poor of a shooting. And look at Kansas. I mean, I haven't upgraded Kansas that much so far in the NCAA tournament. All 4 of their games have played right near the line. The Penn game, obviously, You know, the Clemson game was an unfortunate bad beat for a Kansas ticket I had. And then you look at even the Duke game, even though Kansas, you know, shockingly out-rebounded Duke by 15. That was a stunning stat line there. Held Duke to 7 out of 29 from three-point range. With that being said, Kansas is down three with 30 seconds left in the game, getting three and a half. So they're playing pretty much to expectations as far as that game. So I haven't touched my Kansas power rating too much, about a point or so upgrade, specifically because of Malik Newman coming out of nowhere. Where Villanova, yeah, went and covered four straight, and I they're just rolling along here. Best culture in basketball. I agree with Jay Billis with that remark. I don't like the matchup here for Kansas.
All right, so one thing we got to do here, and I've been doing this with all my guests this week, and I do it at the end of every season that we talk about here. College basketball coming to a close on Monday night with the national championship game. So I know that you're immersed in college football already, but I'm sure you'll take a few minutes to take a look back, sort of see, you know, how things played out for you here with this college basketball season. So let's start with the good side of things here. Let's talk about what you feel like worked really well for you here during this year's College Hoops campaign.
Well, you know, I've had a really, really good college basketball season. I've on all my plays, I've hit like 63%. So, and I quite frankly, it could have been much better than that, because I've actually had an unlucky 63% where I've had some extraordinarily bad beats, specifically in the month of March, but that happens. So a lot of things worked for me this year, and I'm not that type of guy that brags about stuff, because I did not have a good college football season, and I'm not afraid to admit that. College basketball, historically good for me when you're hitting 60-plus percent, and I actually thought it could have been better. A couple of things that I did right, you know, traditionally I would struggle in the month of January the past years, coming from football, just getting used to teams, feeling them out. This year I didn't, and what I just strictly used, and I guess it makes some sense, you know, there's such disparity when you have teams playing, you know, non-conference schedules. And when it comes to January, teams are just getting into conference play, but all their full season stats at that point, the first 10, 12, 13 games of the season, are all in non-conference. And what I took advantage of and wasn't always pricing the line accordingly was I was just playing on teams that maybe didn't have the great record or the great full season stats so far, but had played a much tougher strength of schedule. I thought those strength of schedule disparities was at least worked very well for me this year, particularly in the month of January when I was coming in cold off the college football season. That was something where I usually tended to struggle in the month of January. Didn't this year, just by, you know, not blindly playing on all that, but definitely some of my top plays involved that. That's what worked for me. And when it comes to the tournament time, you know, obviously I think it really sets up if you're contrarian. To have some success, and I've had success in March Madness throughout, but historically good season. I'm going to have to break down and when I have a little bit more time here after next week, but right now I'm not usually a happy guy. I'm a very particular guy when it comes to, you know, it can always be better, and there's always a next level, but you know, this is one of the few times where I've been quite pleased the last 3 months with what's happened in my college basketball handicapping.
Well, pleased or not, I mean, you know, we are all perfectionists here in this industry, and we're all looking to get better, looking to understand more. So I'm sure there are some areas where you feel like you did come up a little bit short, some things that you may look to incorporate differently for next season. What are some of the areas where you feel like, you know, that things didn't work out as well for you, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, I thought I didn't attack the totals market good enough. You know, things were going really good on the sides, and I really didn't jump into the totals. And I think just from a volume aspect, yeah, I was a little bit more selective as far as my picks here. I think there's opportunity, and with a much softer market that I really didn't fully take advantage of. And that's an opportunity that I need to jump in more on the total side. I thought, you know, as far as March Madness, you know, a few of my losses that I've had have been, and I've been a little chalk heavy in this particular month of March. I think I need to obviously go a little bit more contrarian and have some dogs on there. And that's where I've come up a little bit short there. But again, and I'm a full critique, and I'm probably my biggest critic. Do not have any full things that at least right now when I'm overlooking it, there's really nothing that stands out that I really have to fundamentally change towards next season. But as you can see, what works this season doesn't always, you know, necessarily work next season. That's why this is more art than science.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. You mentioned the spring guide that you have up. Anything else going on over at the website right now?
Yeah, I mean, again, you can download that spring guide for free. Check it out. It's 11 jam-packed pages. And, you know, if you want to see every pick that I've had in football, college, or NFL, I don't hide. I got every pick for the last three seasons on there. And, again, if you need most improved teams, you want to look at who's being hired as far as the new head coaches, early top 10 power ratings, all the future tickets that I've made so far in college football, it's free. Now, if you like what you see, I do this football newsletter monthly during the off season. Anytime there's season win totals or week one or game of the year lines posted, I throw the picks in there. $69 covers you not only for the off season, but also the regular season, both college and the NFL, all the way through next year's Super Bowl. Special price right now for it, $69. Check it out, BradPowersSports.com.
A very nice price there for that newsletter. Brad Powers, you can follow him on Twitter, at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, thank you so much again for all your time here throughout the football and the basketball seasons, and I'll talk to you again over the summer.
Hey, sounds good. Take care. Behave yourself. I'll be in touch with you, bud.
Great stuff there today from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. Tremendous resource for us to have here for both football and basketball. One more guest left for this Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is the great Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
You know, it's a sad day, Adam, when it's the final podcast for college basketball, but happy to be with you.
I'm glad to have you on the show here, and I'm going to go ahead and do what I did with Brad on that previous segment right away here, and thank you for your time and for your commitment. And I know that we've had some issues here with recording and other things of that sort over the last few weeks, so I certainly appreciate your patience. But you know, you've been a phenomenal addition to the show here, dating back to last year's college basketball season, and then of course, you know, this full season here. So, you know, thank you so much for your time, for your expertise, and you know, for all the winners that you've shared with our listeners this year, because you've had a very good college basketball season.
You know, it has. I had a couple of fantastic years back in the 90s when I was starting, but this is probably my best year since then. And I attribute it to a few things, you know, now being acclimated to where I am in Vegas, being able to study more, being able to be on the West Coast. And, you know, it seems trivial being able to stay awake and watch West Coast games, but it clearly has helped my basketball handicapping as well as my college football.
All right, well, let's take a look here at some of these specific games. We'll start with the NIT tonight, and this is one where, as we're doing the show here, we've gotten a little bit of Utah investment for this NIT title game tonight. Penn State, now a 3.5-point favorite at BetOnline. Most of the market still sitting 4. What are your thoughts on this one tonight, Rolf?
Well, I had a top play on Penn State against Mississippi State, and you know, really, they have I gave them a 4-point home edge in that game against Mississippi State. Number one, being in the region where you're going to have a sizable Penn State contingency behind you, but most importantly, having played 3 games at Madison Square Garden in the Big Ten tournament gave them a huge edge as far as shooting goes. I still give them a 2-point home edge in this game with Utah having played just in the game against Western Kentucky. I lean with Penn State, but I'm looking for a very low-scoring game. I like the under as well. You know, Utah fell behind against Western Kentucky, had a fight back. They were in it life or death. They were without seven-foot center Jace Johnson. He averages about 6 rebounds and about 6 points in about 20 minutes of play. Johnson may play tonight. He didn't play against Western Kentucky. You know, and then Krestoviak, the head coach of Utah, is pulling out all the motivational factors. Their AD Chris Hill is retiring, and his entire family from New Jersey is going to be there in this game, talk to the team before the locker room, because this is his final athletic event. So, you know, Larry's a sharp guy, and you don't need motivation to win the NIT. If you're here at this point, you're playing in Madison Square Garden. I don't care if it's CBI, the CIT, or the NCAA tournament. When you get to a championship game, you're focused. But, you know, the deciding factor in this for me is Tony Carr. When you see have a 6'5" point guard who can defend like he does, who can shoot from the outside, who can drive the ball like he does, he's a difference maker in the game. So I didn't use either as a customer play as one of my top releases, but I certainly have a definite lean with both Penn State and the under.
I'll ask you the same question that I asked Brad then, and we were talking about it in the context of the bowl bounce when it comes to college football, and you know how perception kind of changes for teams based on what they did when we most recently saw them. Do you feel like there's an NIT bounce coming next year for either one of these teams?
And there often is. You know, I clearly believe that. You know, the difference between these two teams is Utah has four seniors that are an integral part of their team. Penn State only has one. So you have two different teams. You have Utah trying to send their seniors out. You have Penn State feeling like they were shied from the NCAA tournament, trying to build for next year. But I think either way, if you're winning a tournament, you're finishing the season on a positive note, you've seen success, you've had success, you know how to practice and get to that final result, it always leads forward to the next year.
All right, let's go to the CIT championship game here then. That one's coming up on Friday night, so that'll be your appetizer to the Final Four. Illinois-Chicago takes on Northern Colorado. This one in Greeley, Colorado, elevation 4,658 feet. That's obviously been priced into the number here with the Flames having to go out into the Rockies.
Well, you know what? I have not seen a number on this game. Would you share with me? I made the number 10.
Okay, offshore, I'm seeing 9 or 9.5.
Okay, yeah. You know, like I said, I have the number 10. And you look at Illinois-Chicago, what they did. You know, they started off and they lost to Wisconsin-Milwaukee in the Horizon Championship. They had 10 days off before they played St. Francis. Then they had 7 days off before they went to Austin-Peay and pulled the upset. Then they had 7 days off before they went to Liberty and pulled the upset. So now they're playing their third road, but most importantly, they're playing it 2 days later with elevation. Northern Colorado is a team that, you know, I liked them last night, and I don't mind laying double digits or close to it with this team because of their pace of play. They will run the court. They continue to run the court. They play waves of players. They're almost like a hockey team where they're bringing in four new players at a time, and they continue to run the court. I think Illinois-Chicago, you know, I think in the first half, I would be apt to play Illinois-Chicago in a slower pace game. In the second half, I would expect the better conditioned team that's used to elevation, playing at home for a second straight instead of on the road for a third straight, pull away and get close to this number. I won't have a play on the game because it's only 1 point away from my number, but if I had to make a wager, it would be on Northern Colorado.
Something kind of fascinating here about these other two tournaments is that Jeff Linder, the head coach for Northern Colorado, and Grant McCaslin, the head coach for North Texas, both of these guys here taking their teams deep into these tournaments. For Linder, or for McCaslin, his first year there with North Texas, for Linder, his second year with Northern Colorado. Interesting little coaching tree that they got going on there.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked about Northern Colorado. While it's his second year there, it really is his first year because they redshirted three seniors last year. They were on probation. They had another junior starter who they didn't play. So they had four players who would have started for him last year who they redshirted. Obviously, we talked about him earlier this year. I was on him a few times. And, you know, it's satisfying and it's gratifying when you're on one of these teams early in the year it comes to fruition. You thought they were going to be a good team. You bet on them early. You know, one of my regrets, I caught the end of your show and you're going to talk about regrets with Brad. You know, it's the teams like Northern Colorado that were great ATS teams that I was on them early for a few games, but I backed away and I didn't ride their success. You know, once they lost a game, I'm the one that usually goes right back to them. And, you know, just because you're 4-1, you know, normally I'm the guy jumping on them for that sixth play again so they catch another streak. And they were a very good ATS team. And one of my regrets is not riding Northern Colorado and a few teams like that that I had circled throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. And I think it's a really good lesson to learn here is that, you know, if you're putting in all that preseason work and you put in a ton for college basketball this year and it's evident by the success that you've had, you have to trust yourself. And sometimes that can be a tough lesson to learn. And sometimes you trust yourself and things don't work out. And then you kind of have that crisis of confidence once again. But I think it's a good lesson for our listeners there is that, you know, even a seasoned pro like Rolf, somebody who's done this for a very long time, still, you kind of have to get over that mental hurdle of, you know, trusting all the work that you've done. And hopefully that is something that does pay off for you as we head on into next year. I am seeing a line for the CBI championship game. That one also on Friday night here. BetOnline and Five Dimes both have North Texas favored by 4 over San Francisco, total of 140 in that one. So I guess we can talk about the CBI championship game here as well.
You can. I made that number 6. And, you know, the CBI is unique. It's a three-game final. The first game is at one site, which was San Francisco. The next two games are at North Texas. And I was on North Texas yesterday as an actual client play. And the reason was, I mean, yeah, listeners know I've been on North Texas as well. I was on them at the end of the year. I thought the way they were playing, we've talked about when you have a very young team, like they have every player back. I think they have one senior who may come back for a fifth year, but everybody is back. You have a first-year head coach. You've changed systems. You took your beatings earlier in the year, and you just improved as the season progressed. And that is North Texas to a T. You know, San Francisco has a Princeton-style offense. That's tough to play defense against. It makes you run. It makes you work hard on defense. And it showed that North Texas only shot 2 of 18 when they went to San Francisco from three-point land. Actually, they shot 19% when they were at San Francisco. San Francisco won that game, and the Dons shot 14 of 33 from three-point land. They came back to Denton, and that was the first game on the road in over 30 days for San Francisco. Each one of their tournament games were at home. So, again, after not traveling for a lengthy period of time, I didn't expect them to do well last night. The reason I'm on North Texas again is North Texas last night in that game shot 2 of 18 from three-point land. So I have a team that I like. I have a team that only shot 2 of 18 at home, still won by 15. They had a 43-31 rebounding edge. They clearly out-hustled San Francisco. They're the younger, hungrier team playing at home. This would give them their 20th win. You know, what a difference. You finish 19-19 and you're the runner-up, or you finish 20-18 and you're the champion of that tournament. I mean, you can't have a bigger motivational edge in this game. You know, San Fran, it's unusual going on the road, staying in the place, playing in the same place again. Yes, you have some familiarity. But when North Texas has an outlier performance like 2 of 18 from three-pointer and still wins by 15, I'm going to be on them again. I made the line 6. They very well may be a late phone play for my customers.
I like it. Great breakdown there of the CBI final between San Francisco and North Texas. So let's get into the Final Four here. First semifinal Saturday night, Loyola Chicago takes on Michigan. The Wolverines favored by 5.5.
You look at the lines, and from a layman's point, you say, huh, I have a 3 seed against an 11 seed giving 5.5. And I have 2 number 1 seeds giving and the line's about 5.5. You know, that has a little bit to do with poor seeding. I had Loyola, you know, Loyola was an 11 seed. In my power ratings, if I look at them, they would have been closer to a 7 or 8 seed. I have Michigan stronger than Kansas, so in my book, both Michigan and Kansas were closer to 2 seeds. But I'll tell you what, as a Buckeye fan, it hurts me to say that I like the Michigan Wolverines in this game. You look at Loyola, the 3 wins by 4 points, but they've had a run that's been very, very favorable for them. They beat Miami without Bruce Brown. He's going to be a number 1 draft choice. He's their leading scorer, leading rebounder, leading assist man. They beat Tennessee without 6'11" Kyle Alexander, one of their top rebounders. They beat Nevada without Lindsey Drew, the all-star point guard. Now, I know they played well without Drew, but still, when you get to this point, you need that point guard, especially against Loyola and Clayton Cluster and the way he can shut down a ball stopper. And then Kansas State, Dean Wade didn't play. So, you know, while I love the Cinderella story, while I love, you know, Loyola because they used to be in the Horizon with Cleveland State before they moved to the Missouri Valley, I just think they've had a favorable draw from here on out. They haven't seen anyone inside like Maurice Wagner, the 6'10" big man who can score. Michigan's defense is absolutely outstanding. I think Ken Pom has them number 3 overall in defensive efficiency. I like the Wolverines.
All right, let's move over to the other game then, since it sounds like you got a pretty strong conviction there on that one. Kansas and Villanova. Villanova, 5-point favorite in this one. Very thrilling win for Kansas over Duke, a game that, realistically, I mean, they kind of lost twice in regulation. They were down 3 with about 30 seconds left. Grayson Allen's shot goes 360 around the cylinder, another 180 before falling off, and then Kansas wins that game in overtime. So what do you think the Jayhawks have for Villanova in this one?
You know, this is a rematch from 2 years ago, the Elite Eight. Villanova beat Kansas 64-59. Obviously, revenge means nothing at this point when you get to the Final Four, just more of a an extra note to the game. You know, I've gone back and forth in this one, and I'm a fan of Villanova. And, you know, we talk about Villanova, and I heard the end of your show, and, you know, you were talking about their ball movement and their offense. You know, they are the number one offensive efficiency team in the country. And I often tell my customers, when you're number one or number 351, you don't know how good or how bad you are. You know, there's a marginable difference between one and two, but I think Villanova's offense is so good that if the scale kept going, they would be like at a minus 10. You know, they would be that far ahead of the number two team. So while you have a marginable one and two rank, I think they are just far away a better offensive team. You know, I went back to look at what teams have done. Villanova's shooting 49.9% from 2-point. They're shooting 40.1 from 3 points. Since 2011, that's the last 6 years, only three power teams have shot 50% from 2-point and 40% from 3-point. Missouri in the 2011-2012 season, Indiana the 2015 and 2016 season, and UCLA, we know what kind of offense they had last year. So those are the only three teams in the last 7 years that have shot 50 and 40, and Villanova's one of those teams. Then you add a powerful defense that can press. Now, with that being said, you know, I like Kansas, and I like the Azubuike matchup. You know, having a 7-footer, 280-pound guy in the middle, you look at Villanova's front line, Bridges, Paschal, and Spellman, 6'7", 6'7", 6'8". Azubuike is the different maker for me, and I'm not going to have an opinion on the game, but I'm going to give some live betting advice for those that can play it. Azubuike in the regular season and during the Big 12 tournament fouled out one time, but in the last three games against these physical tournament teams, he had four personal fouls against Seton Hall. He fouled out against Clemson, and he fouled out against Duke. So now we're looking at, if Azubuike gets his second personal foul early in the game, I would be betting Villanova. If Azubuike goes through most of the first half without a foul and will be in there the second half, I will probably look to play Kansas. So I am actually basing this entire play on one person, but I think he's worthy of having that that decision on his shoulders.
Well, and that's one of the beautiful advantages of live betting, and that was something that I did a couple times in the earlier rounds of this tournament, either playing sides or playing unders because of guys in foul trouble. You know, you had some teams in the early rounds of this tournament so dependent on one or two players to create offense for them. If that player had two fouls before the 10-minute mark of the first half, he was going out, and that team was going to really struggle. And we did see some good opportunities like that. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but you know, those are opportunities that you do get when you follow these games live. So I think you're definitely onto something there. All right, so let's say the favorites hold up in both of these games. Let's say we get Michigan and Villanova. What are you looking at in terms of a line for the national championship game? And you know, what side do you think you'd be looking to take there?
Well, you know, Five Dimes does actually have their lines out. They have Villanova against Michigan, 6 and 143.5. Villanova against Loyola, 9.5 and 143.5. I like the Loyola line. I would lean with Villanova against Loyola, and yes, I would lay that number, surprisingly, as I play the game out in my head. I only made the Villanova-Michigan line 4. I would lean with the Wolverines plus the points against Villanova. I think they have the defense to be able to slow them down. Again, they have the interior scoring, which Villanova, you know, if they got by Kansas, that's one thing. you know, if they got by Kansas because Azubuike is in foul trouble, that's another thing. So I right now I would look to take Michigan plus the points or Villanova minus the points against Loyola.
All right, so let's say that we get Loyola. Let's say Cinderella keeps that glass slipper on for one more round and winds up playing either Kansas or Villanova. And you know, in terms of looking at this one, you've got Loyola as a 7-point dog against Kansas, Michigan a 2-point dog against Kansas. So you know, I think that it's pretty interesting to look at those two lines in particular, you know, to sort of see that, you know, I mean, you've got Villanova's a 5-point favorite over Kansas, and then these lines aren't exactly distributed in that same way if Kansas advances. So you know, is that kind of like sort of telling you what the odds makers think may happen in this game?
Well, you know, we've talked about it before. It has to do with matchups. You know, some of those games that we talked about last week, I had almost a 2.5-point difference from the line that day to the following line because of the matchups and the players. You know, Kansas, you know, they do have Kansas as the better team. I think the Kansas number, though, is them. I have Michigan as the better team in my mind. I think Michigan should be favored against Kansas. But, you know, you have that situation where you have a 1-3 seed and you have a blue blood Kansas against Michigan, who people know are good. But again, they see the 3 seed. So I think that number is based on what Joe Public would play the game at and not where the value is. I think Michigan should be a 2-point favorite. As far as Kansas Loyola goes, you know, if Loyola got past Michigan, I would lean with the underdog here against Kansas. I mean, I'm not totally anti-Kansas, but, you know, I remember Larrañaga talking about it, and he said when George Mason, I think, got to the Final Four, and he always said that first game is so much harder. If you can get to the second game of the championship, because the first game is so structured and you have so many media days and you're practicing for this amount exact of minutes, and then you're taking a bus and you're going here, and you know, it's not as if though if you're relaxed playing. When you get to the second day, it's easy. You're just waking up the next morning, have a day off, and you're playing ball. So if Loyola got past that first stage, I would lean with them as the dog in the second round or in the finals.
All right. So I know that we mentioned that, you know, you feel like you've done really well in terms of isolating some teams here early on in the college basketball season. And one of the areas where you do feel like you came up a little bit short was, you know, not trusting some of those opinions. So as you look back here at, you know, everything that worked for you, everything that didn't work for you in college basketball, are there some things that you will look to change for next year?
Oh, absolutely. I had, you know, I had one of my worst Novembers this year. My turning point was actually December 19th. I just know that from, you know, my streaks go from December 19th, although I have my season to date average. And I counted on my power ratings too much earlier in the year. And, you know, we talk about putting in the work and trusting the work you do, but a power rating number early in the year is just a number. You need to be more reactive of what a team does one day to the next. And if they have outlier performances, you have many more outlier good and bad performances early in the year. And I might have overreacted to those too much, changing my numbers instead of letting them play out. You know, next year what I'll do is I'll have my opening power rating numbers, look at them as a guide, and not change them for at least 2.5 weeks to everyone has some multiple games in, instead of trying to change them weekly after one or two games, and they can get adjusted too high or too low. So, you know, that's one thing I've done. The other thing I did, and I adjusted mid-season, and it really helped me, is that, you know, you looked at some of these low totals that I passed on. We saw historically low totals this year with Virginia and Central Florida and Cincinnati, you know, in the 110s and the 120s. Those were money. I mean, and early in the year I was passing on those. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. My customers are going to bitch. It's a 119 or a 120. The total's so low. It doesn't matter. I hit, I think, 80% of those totals that were under 125, I finished 80% on. It's again, when you're at the outlier and going too high and too low, Vegas usually doesn't get to where those numbers should be. They're somewhere in the middle because the number too low, they're not going to get the public to bet it. So take advantage of those outlier numbers, either high or low, because Joe Public thinks they're too high or too low, as a handicapper with experience, or even a person that pays attention to college basketball, those numbers aren't too high or too low.
I want to spend a couple of minutes here on the NBA, and I know you and I haven't talked much about the NBA, and really we haven't talked much about the NBA on the shows here lately at all. And I cited that Matt Holt tweet from earlier on in the week that the CBI game one between San Francisco and North Texas got twice the handle of any NBA game that night. So that's part of the reason why we haven't talked too much NBA here on the show, is that there's just not a whole lot of people playing it right now, and it is a very, very hard market to beat night in and night out. There are a lot more opportunities in college basketball. So I know you do the NBA stat sheet. I know that you've done some things with the NBA here this year. What do you feel like's worked for you here in the NBA this season?
You know, the NBA stat sheet has taught me a lot, and it really is that there are so many ups and downs and the ebb and flow of an NBA season that each team is streaky good or streaky bad of some period of time. You know, the stat sheet, when I broke down the stat sheet and I started publishing it, I took the last 2 weeks' records. So that's usually about six or seven games. An NBA team will play six or seven games in a 14-day span. And I look at those numbers and only those numbers, the offense, the defense, the ATS records, the over-under records for that two-week period of time. Obviously, you're factoring in players that were gone or injured players that may be back. But again, an NBA team in December can be so much different than January. And by eliminating the year-to-date, you eliminated the year-to-date's going to give you the average of the year. Well, that does nobody any good. Looking at a two- or a three-week period in the NBA has given me success, has given the stat sheet success. I don't know if it's the right way to go, but it certainly has helped my bottom line and my customer's bottom line by looking at that. So it allows you to be on top of streaks. It allows you to play on those streaky teams. And when they start to fade, you can see pretty quick when they start to lose and then back off of them.
And that's so important. That is a revelation that I've had both about the NBA and the NHL here this year, as I, you know, I'm always evaluating myself as well. The streaky nature of those two daily winter leagues, it's just remarkable to watch that. And it's tough on me because I'm a sample size guy. I talk about this all the time. I talk about it in my Bettors Box podcast, which I've already recorded for tomorrow. That, you know, I like sample sizes. I like having as many data points as possible. I like having those statistics to back everything up. And in the NBA and the NHL, you basically go in, as you were talking about, 3, 5, 7 game increments. And that's kind of, you know, what you have to do there. And it's just a really uncomfortable thing for me, to say the least. So, you know, I don't do much with the NBA. I write the situational article, and, you know, if I find a really good spot, that's that. But it's real hard in a league that, you know, it does have some consistency issues, and you know, effort and motivation are just always up in the air.
Yeah, you know, a couple examples. You know, Portland, I believe, they lost last night at Memphis. They were in a horrible spot. Portland was on the road. They were at Oklahoma City, which was like a playoff game. They went to New Orleans. They battled back, and then they lost at Memphis yesterday. They're still 15-2 against the spread. They're playing the Clippers coming up here. I'll like them. You know, the Bulls are, you know, the last couple of weeks, they've been horrendous. They're just tanking. You know, I'm looking at my stat sheet for today. The last 2 weeks, the Bulls are 0-6. They did cover one game. And it shows that their average line is 9.5. Their average total for that two-week period is 217.1. Their average score is 98.2 to 118.7. So they're losing by 20.5 points a game. So when you have a two-week period and you're 0-6 ATS and you're losing games, you're failing to cover games by 11 points per game, you're getting some value. You know, the other thing to talk about in the NBA is look at those margins. I mean, there are times when a team is 3-4 ATS and just missed covering by 1 or 2 points. And then there's times like the Bulls that, you know, you're 1-5 and you failed to cover by 11 points per game. So looking to see on the margin of the failing to cover or the over-under, I think, is something important too. The stat sheet does show you that because it gives you their average lines and average scores. That don't look at an ATS or an over-under number. Every 3-2 team is not equal. A 3-2 team, you know, could be covered by a point, covered by a point, covered by a point, failed to cover their two road games by 10 points each. And a 3-2 team may be, you know, you covered your three games by 10 points each. There's much more value in that 3-2 team with the bigger covers than putting a luck factor in of covering by a hoop or not.
All right. Well, it sounds like that's one thing that you'll look to incorporate a little bit more here heading into next year. Is there anything else that, you know, you feel like you came up a little bit short with in the NBA?
You know, NBA is still hit and miss for me. I usually only have one or two plays a week, so I'm very, very conservative, and it's worked for me. So, you know, I continue to make adjustments, and, you know, as I've done the stat sheet, this is the second year now, I've learned a lot from it, but, you know, I'm happy with my NBA the way it is. You know, as I said, I lost on Phoenix last night. They're a horrible team, but they've been playing hard. Clippers were in a bad spot. Phoenix was getting 10. I think they lost by 12. So it doesn't always work, and there's losses in there. But in the NBA, I'm so conservative, and I tell my customers that, you know, a college basketball three-star play for me and my customers is a very strong release. I rate my plays 3, 4, and 5. And for me to have an NBA three-star play, it means it's as strong as that college play. Every sport carries over to that strength. So obviously, I don't think there's that much value in the NBA to only be using a couple plays a week. But when it's there, I use them, and it's worked out successfully.
Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Obviously, college basketball winding down here now. What do you got going on over at the website?
Well, you know, after the first weekend of games, and there's some games in the book, you'll be able to get first pitch. It's a Major League Baseball daily newsletter with 2 full pages per matchup. For those of you that can play first inning games and fifth inning games, my first pitch newsletter at Wager Talk has the pitcher's last 15 performances, the team's last 20 performances. It gives you all the normal stats, the lines, the ATS wins, the over-unders, but it also has first inning and fifth inning scores for the pitcher and the team. So if you could play those first inning games, or if there will be a first inning score, it's a great tool to look at how the pitchers and teams have done. And a lot of you play the fifth inning, taking the bullpens out of play. It has those records in there as well. So it's something that I haven't found anywhere else. It's unique to our newsletter. You're going to get all the normal matchups and how they've done as a home favorite, home dog, you know, the run lines, the day, the night. It does give you the average lines as well, which is important. You know, if you're 3-3 and your average line is a dog, a lot different than being 3-3 as a 150 favorite. We all know that. That's layman's terms. But when you're reading it and seeing it each day, it's on there. So I'll start doing that probably next Monday or Tuesday after we got a few games in the book. That'll be at wagertalk.com. Go to news and then go to MLB Daily, or you'll say it as well. But follow me at Twitter, CalSportsLV. I'll be tweeting out when it's out daily.
Yeah, you stole my thunder there. So make sure you follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. And Rolf, like I said, man, it's been a pleasure to chat with you here throughout the football and college basketball seasons. Thank you so much for all your time and effort. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again over the summer.
Adam, you're incredible. I love your show. You do a fantastic job. Everyone enjoy the summer. Hopefully we'll be back talking football next year, football season on Thursdays.
Thank you so much, Rolf. Really appreciate it. Rolf Michaels there from WagerTalk.com, and again on Twitter at CalSportsLV. So as we talked about here, this is the last of the daily shows. We'll fire them up again the beginning of August, where we do every day. Over the summer, we'll do the Bettors Box, my MLB betting podcast. We'll have one tomorrow as our first show of the season. Then I'll do them every Monday, Thursday after that. You can still send me questions for the Monday mailbag at Skating Tripods on Twitter, or adam@bangthebook.com. So we'll do that Mondays and Wednesdays here up until the month of August. Then we'll go every day. We will have some, you know, one-off shows, or maybe some Tuesday takeover shows where I bring on some of the guests from the program. Maybe when college football season win totals come out, we'll hear from Brad. Next week, we're trying to do a Masters preview with Brian Blessing. You know, maybe the NHL playoffs, when we get to the Stanley Cup finals, maybe we'll get Brian on. You know, we'll talk NBA finals with maybe Philip Rosenreich or something like that. So we will try to get Joe Everett for the NFL draft. We will try to get some stuff here over the next several weeks throughout the summer. But, you know, it's good for everybody to kind of wind down, catch a breather. I'm going to be doing a ton of writing here over the summer. We're going to preview all 130 college football season win totals. We're going to do all 32 NFL season win totals over at bangthebook.com. So we're going to have a lot of that stuff going on. And, you know, it's been a daily grind every day since the month of August, basically, for me. So, you know, to get a little bit of time to catch my breath and, you know, be a fan, you know, instead of everything being work, just to be a fan for a little bit is something that's helpful to me. So hopefully our listeners understand. Please stick with us through the Bettors Box. I know that some of you probably aren't big baseball handicappers, but I present a lot of great information. I think I do a good job of bringing some of the advanced metrics to the forefront in ways that people can understand. I love doing it, and hopefully you'll be able to hear that through my work on the Bettors Box. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Enjoy tomorrow's Bettors Box, and then I'll talk to you again on Monday.